Okay, we're going to call the Education Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, February 22nd. The time is a little bit after 8 o'clock, about 8:03. In attendance today is the co-chairman Thomas, vice chairman Davis, Senator Stevens, Senator French, and myself, co-chairman Meyer. So we have a full committee here today to conduct business. I want to welcome everyone here on this Friday morning. Today we will be taking up the or continue our discussion on the scholarship performance scholarship program, and we're going to have a overview by Jomo Stewart on the scholarship funding task force report that hopefully everybody has and that we spent quite a bit of time over the interim discussing. But before we have Mr. Stewart join us, I'd like to welcome our new Commissioner of Education, Mr. Hanley. Mr. Hanley, actually, if you want to come up front here so we can all see you, and you're welcome to say a few words. Thanks for joining us today.
Great. Thank you, Senator Meyer. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate your patience with me arriving, but I can say the positive side to that is that if I had to come sooner, you probably wouldn't have a need to talk to me, largely because I can't picture me coming down here as an educational leader for our state and having such a detrimental effect on 500 of our kids and a whole learning community. And that was critical for me to make sure that was done well, and it didn't make sense to do it any other way. So I made a commitment to the governor that I would be here as quickly as I could, and as soon as we were able to get an acting principal in there, I was able to make it down. So I do appreciate your patience with that. I am committed to what I'm doing. I do practice what I preach, and that's the way I needed to make sure that we started this off. So thank you for that. I am now fully committed to all the children in the state of Alaska, and I'm committed, especially right now, to helping you do what you need to do in the next 73 days to get things passed. So I'm working extensively with our department, with the vision I've got for that department. From Anchorage, I've had the 30,000-foot view. I'm getting it down to the 10,000-foot view, and that's not what you need. You need the ground-level view. And so I'm working on those details as quickly as I can. So I'll make a commitment to you to get those answers for you, to get what you need. They may not all come out of my mouth, but I'll be here with my staff so that we can do what needs to be done for our kids. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hanley. I know you're not prepared to answer questions, but any thoughts or concerns or questions the committee members have before we get on with our business? You'll be attending our committee meetings off
yeah,
and on? And
absolutely.
Okay. And I haven't discussed with the co-chairman, but it might be good if we could have you come back and just kind of give us a overview on where you see education going, your vision.
I'd love to do it.
Okay. Okay. Great. Well, very good. We'll hold that for another meeting. And
thank you,
Commissioner Hanley. And congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, then let's continue on here with Mr. Jomo Stewart. Jomo was an aide to myself last year and was a frequent member of the Education Committee last year and spent most of his summer in interim staffing the Education Funding Task Force that met frequently. Prepared this report that hopefully everybody has before you on the recommendations. And he's going to go through the report. Also, I think everybody has a copy of the actual scholarship, performance scholarship bill that we passed last year as well. The goal here will be that after Mr. Stewart's presentation on Monday, we'll be taking up amendments or discussing amendments in hopes of coming back with a CS to the bill that we had passed last year, and then integrating some of the recommendations of the task force and then hopefully enriching the overall performance scholarship bill itself. And we do have several guests here in the audience, so let's go ahead and introduce them before we continue on. I noticed Senator Giesel, are you?
Yep.
You're here again. Boy, you're getting to be a regular. Yeah, welcome to the Education Committee. And also we have Senator Menard. Welcome, Senator Menard. Thank you for joining us. Okay, with that, Mr. Stewart, the floor is yours.
Good morning. My name is Jomo Stewart. Currently, I'm staff representative Steve Thompson, aide to the House Fisheries Committee, but formerly I was staff to Representative, or excuse me, Senator Meyer, and had the honor of being staff to the task force, former co-committee aide to the Senate Education Committee. I was asked to give you all a brief overview of the task force process and report. I have to admit that I'm hip deep in learning fish. It's a very steep learning curve. I got to tell my kids that I'm back in school too, and they thought that was pretty funny. So I didn't get a chance to listen to the last Senate Education Committee, so I don't know what was promised you, what was advertised, but I was just handed this, but I'm going to go ahead and go for it, the Alaska Performance Scholarship. The task force report, the task force process, I guess probably the best way to start was to just give you a brief overview of the task force process. The chairman thought it was very important because we had members on the task force that had not been part of the legislative process that helped create the scholarship hadn't been privy to those discussions, that it was very important that they get a background on the scholarship itself, where it had come from, how it had moved through the legislative process to eventually become law. So that was the very first meeting we had. We had a meeting we went through the original Taylor plan, which was the intellectual basis for the scholarship. We looked at the proposal that had been originally submitted by the governor, the versions that had moved through and come out of the education committees, both House and Senate, and finally to the scholarship version that had become law. The next thing we did was we went ahead and looked at the component parts of the scholarship. The merit-based component, based on performance. We also did a review of needs-based funding and needs-based assistance. Finally, we moved through the means and mechanisms, because the name of the Scholarship Task Force was, in fact, the Joint Legislative Higher Education Scholarship Funding Task Force, primarily tasked with trying to find a sustainable funding mechanism for the scholarship. We began to look at the funding means and mechanisms available to the state for funding scholarships and other programs, different kinds of accounts, different kinds of accounting, different ways of allocating and appropriating funds. And finally, we used that information as kind of a filter to look at different incarnations of how we might establish a sustainable funding mechanism for the scholarship, different proposals that had been brought forward. So the governor's proposal, which was essentially what we characterized as an endowment, a large sum of money in an account, secure, spinning off interest to pay for scholarships. We looked at what we called rolling accounts. Surety accounts is the way they ended up being described. Smaller capital appropriation, smaller capital base, but with enough money to ensure that a promise made would be a promise kept to cohorts of students, even if you had to go into a wind down eventually because of budgetary pressures. And of course, finally, we looked at the default being making no special provision for the scholarship. And what would that look like, having to have the scholarship on a yearly basis be subjected to the rigor and vicissitudes of the budgetary process? And then finally, because the mandate of the scholarship task force was actually fairly broad and allowed the task force to look at not just the scholarship itself, but broader educational issues and financial aid issues around the state, we looked at different ways we might amend or approve. I believe actually the statement from the legislation was improvements or additions that we might make to the scholarship to make it perform optimally. The task force, the report itself, we went ahead and put the recommendations right up front in bullet form, and they're really fairly straightforward, I believe. As far as funding and finance was concerned, the scholarship task force recognized that in the original legislation, the legislation that got passed, Senate Bill 221, created the skeletal framework for the scholarship, but didn't actually create the account that might hold monies for the scholarship. So one of the first recommendations was simply that some kind of account should be created specific to the scholarship to hold monies for that purpose. If possible, it was felt that the state, the legislature, and the administration should capitalize that fund preferably to the point where that fund would be self-sufficient and self-sustaining, again, going back to the original endowment idea. But were that not possible politically or financially, that at least enough money should be deposited into that account again for it to be able to act as a surety account for future generations and for future cohorts of students. Again, a promise made to a freshman who's come in and decided they're going to go ahead and take that rigorous curriculum. The money would be available for them in that last year of college, that fourth year of college. Let's see. As far as the scholarship structure itself, it was decided that we wouldn't how do I put this delicately? That we wouldn't monkey too much with it. We have a brand new scholarship. We created a good structure, a good basic structure for the scholarship. And it is the natural inclination to want to tinker and to try to improve things. And that's a good impulse. But eventually you have to let something fly to see how it works. So there was a decision made not to, or not to delve too deeply into amendments to the scholarship structure itself. But we did, the scholarship task force did make some recommendations regarding the scholarship itself. So on the merit-based component, there was a much discussion regarding the curriculum. The original scholarship bill had been a unified curriculum. I believe it was 4-4-4-4. 4 years of math, 4 years of science, 4 years of English, and then social studies. What came out of the Senate Education Committee had actually been a bifurcated system. What was described as essentially a science and engineering track and perhaps a liberal arts track, allowing for the natural propensity of some students to be more mathematically or scientifically inclined, and others who want to go off and be journalist majors, or like myself, a poli-sci major. There was some, again, there were those on the task force who believed that we should return to that unified structure. They considered that to be the highest level of rigor. But again, it was decided that no, we should go ahead and let this thing fly. Allow for the dual system, the dual curricular system, and at least give it some time to see how it would work. The task force did make a couple of recommendations, however, or at least one recommendation regarding the curriculum, and that was simply that there should be more specificity given to, or there should be more detail generated regarding the actual classes that would be taken.
Mr. Sturt, do you want to take questions as you go, or at the end? How would you like to handle this?
I am at your disposal.
Okay. Senator French.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And it's just while we're on this issue of the merit-based component and the curriculum necessary to qualify for it, maybe you could discuss for me, I wasn't a member of the task force, and the public may be curious as well, about what impact or what effect the curriculum may have in rural Alaska. My understanding, and you may be able to correct me, my understanding is that many parts of rural Alaska are concerned about their school district are concerned that their students will not be able to qualify for the merit-based scholarship because not all the classes that are required in the scholarship curricula are offered in their school districts.
The legislation itself, Senate Bill 221, did make some accommodation for that. That it was recognized that in the initial years, not just school districts, but individual schools and students may not have taken all components of the scholarship's required curriculum. You have to understand that, I mean, the very first cohort of students that are going to be eligible for this scholarship are this year's students. So they wouldn't have had the benefit of 4 years of knowledge regarding the curriculum.
Just a point of clarification, when you say this year's students, do you mean this year's seniors or this year's freshmen?
This year's graduates. This year's seniors. Graduating seniors, I believe, will be eligible for scholarships. Right. Again, they will not have had the benefit of 4 years of knowledge of what the required curriculum was, but they are still going to be eligible for scholarships. And the transition language seeks to accommodate that reality. Regarding rural Alaska, there actually was, we did put in a recommendation, or the task force did put in a recommendation regarding distance delivery. Again, the committee was told, and it wasn't just this one, the legislature was told last year during the course of the deliberations on the scholarship that, in fact, every school in the state would be able to provide the required curriculum. But that is an open question. Anecdotally, we hear that in fact that may not be the case. So under the merit-based component, there was a distance delivery recommendation, which is that the legislature should do an assessment of the state's existing delivery distance delivery capacity, and should it be necessary to develop a plan, including cost estimates, for upgrading the Department of Education Early Development's capacity to provide a virtual program or distance-delivered secondary courses. So it was recognized both by the administration, the legislature, and the task force, or all three, that may in fact be the case. And some accommodation was made. I don't know if it will be up to you all to decide whether or not that accommodation is sufficient.
Okay. Senator French?
Thank you. And I appreciate your reference to anecdotes because, frankly, this is just something I've heard. I don't know. And I guess at this point I would, through you and through gavel to gavel, sort of ask the state's school districts to come forward and show me, show you, show the committee, you know, which school districts are going to come up wanting under if we adopt this plan and which are not. I think it's, you know, it's because it's much easier to deal with specifics than an anecdote. And moreover, I guess that so that's point one, which is, you know, sort of a call to the districts to come forward. Point two is, did we put a time element on this assessment that the task force is asking to have happen? Is it a one-year assessment, you know, to be completed within a year, within 6 months? Does anybody know? Is it open-ended? Thank you.
It was a general recommendation within the report itself. It was not time specific. It sounded it was prudent.
Yeah, Senator Stevens.
I think Senator French has touched on a very important issue that we can't remind ourselves enough that establishing a virtual program can be quite wonderful, but it's not enough in itself. That yet the best teacher on one end of a television hookup is not enough to help the student on the other end. You can't expect someone who's having a student who's having a little trouble, maybe living in a small village, to be able to do the whole internet thing himself. He needs to have some assistance, whether it's a teacher, whether it's an aide, but someone there to answer questions that he may have as he's receiving that information through virtual means. So it's there's no simple answer, and it's going to be difficult to make sure that all of our schools do have that ability to explain to the student what's going on the virtual end of things.
Yeah, Senator French, that is an ongoing concern of this committee, and we have had discussions with the administration on it, and they have been in contact with each school district. So at some point in time, we're going to have them address this issue. I think we're going to want to tighten it up in the bill itself so that we know that all school districts can be eligible for this program. Senator Davis.
Actually, you said pretty much what I wanted to say, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry.
But I do want to say that the previous commissioner and the people in the department came forward and said that we will make sure that we provide whatever is needed for the rural students to be eligible to qualify for this scholarship. That's why it's good that we have the new commissioner here, because he needs to review all that and he needs to come back to us and tell us exactly what's going to happen, so that we will meet the needs of the rural students.
Thank you. Okay, very good. Mr. Stewart, please continue. Wherever you were.
I will state that it has been stated that the scholarship was meant to be a transformative impetus, and on the long enough time horizon, the goal was not to have virtual delivery necessarily of curriculum, but that, again, that it's supposed to act as a bottom-up driver for transformation within our educational system, so that every student has reasonable and equitable access to this curriculum, a good education. So again, it's virtual delivery may be the means we use. It may be more boots on the ground in rural Alaska, but it is over time. It's supposed to create a groundswell whereby students and parents and teachers lean on administrations higher up the food chain to get the resources necessary so that every kid has a fighting shot.
Okay. Very good, Mr. Stewart.
And I've lost my place. let's see.
Page 7, aren't you on? I just finished that, I think.
Sure. Where were we? Hold on, let me get to my recommendation sheet again. Regarding the needs-based component, if I may jump forward a little bit, regarding the needs-based component. The original scholarship did not include a needs-based component or needs-based accommodation. However, coming out of, I'm not sure exactly what the chicken and the egg was, but a needs-based component was included in the versions that came out of the House and Senate Education Committees. And it is my understanding, my belief, my recollection, that that actually had been provided by the governor's office at our request. But that, again, I fell off and fell out of the 221, the bare bones, the structural framework that was included in statute. The task force gave consideration to a needs-based component and had a presentation from the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education regarding needs-based funding, the need for needs-based funding, different mechanisms we might use to provide needs-based funding, and to whom our target audience might be. The report itself actually calls for effectively two kinds of needs-based assistance. It was considered by the task force that it would be a tragedy if you had a student who took the rigorous curriculum, scored well on the exams, SAT or ACT or whatever exam we choose to use for benchmarking, received their scholarship and yet could not use it because they still didn't have enough money to go to college. And so we, the task force recommended a reintegration of a needs-based component into the scholarship itself as a supplement to that needs-based funding, or excuse me, merit-based funding. To state it again, you'd be able to get, you'd get a merit-based scholarship based on tuition, and you could also have a needs-based assistance that would go along with it, again, integrated for and directed to merit-based scholars. But that also, the reality of Alaska college going and higher education is that we have a high number, high percentage of non-traditional students, and that it, the task force thought that it would be nice if we also gave greater assistance to those non-traditional students as well. So the scholarship task force recommendation was, again, a reintegrated needs-based component into the merit-based scholarship itself, but also greater financial assistance to our existing needs-based assistance program, which is the Alaska Advantage Program.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stevens.
It's just a comment. You know, despite the governor's original merit-based, and despite all of the advice we heard from pretty much all the professionals in the room and elsewhere, the legislature, both the House and the Senate, insisted on having a needs-based component. And we kept hearing from others that maybe that's not the best idea, but I think it's interesting that both the House and the Senate independently in our education committees both insisted that there be a needs-based component, which I that's exactly what Jomo was saying, but I think it's important to realize that it was sort of in the face of all the expert advice we were receiving. Maybe you could comment, Jomo, if things work out as planned, many of the students who will be receiving a merit-based scholarship will actually be students who would be considered with great needs, financial needs as well. So as things progress, wouldn't you suspect that many of the students who have needs-based would be accommodated through the merit-based form of the scholarship? Does that make sense?
Jomo, if I can help here, I think we were looking at several different alternatives for needs-based. What we found out was that some of the kids who qualify for the merit scholarship, and they get the, what is it, the $4,500 if they had all A's, but that wouldn't cover all their education costs. That basically just covers tuition. It doesn't cover room and board. And so at the time last year, we thought that, well, it would be a shame if they had this merit scholarship but still couldn't afford to go to school. So that's why then we thought about integrating a needs base to go along with the merit. And then also during the summer, we realized that we had a whole group of people, non-traditional student, that just needed some help. You know, maybe they're 40, 50 years old, three or four kids, unemployed, and they need to go back to school. We want to be able to help them. So I'm not sure. And then we also heard, though, that some of our best students are students that actually work while they go to school, especially if they work on campus. So I think we kind of came to the conclusion that we don't want to fund all of their education and the costs associated with that, but we want to be able to provide a boost to both those who get the merit scholarship and then those who are the non-traditional students. And I think that's an area we're still going to have to flange out a little bit more. But I do believe that we agree that the Alaska Advantage program seems to be a good means and source for the needs-based side. And we want to kind of keep the two separate, merit versus the needs-based, but then also have them tied together as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the explanation, but I just think it is very important that independently both the House and the Senate, not working together at all, came mm-hmm. to the same conclusions.
Exactly.
Now, a caveat regarding the needs-based component to be reintegrated into the scholarship. The original proposal that had been submitted, or the original idea that had been submitted to the education committees was, and you all will please come forward and correct me if I'm wrong, essentially it was outstanding financial need minus a, with 50% of outstanding financial need minus a $2,000 deductible. And under that construct, the actual cost to the state of the needs-based component could have been substantial. The original scholarship proposal came in at full ramp up at around $20 million a year. Under the estimates that had been provided and in the fiscal notes, the cost of the needs-based component would essentially double the program, would be commensurate with that value. So you would, with an integrated need-based component under the original proposal, the cost of the scholarship had gone from $20 to $40 million a year. The reason for that was the needs-based component, the assessment would be outstanding financial need, which, unlike the merit-based component, which again, as Chairman Meyer just stated, was tied to just tuition, outstanding financial need takes into account a whole range of extra of other costs associated with college or higher education going that are simply beyond tuition, your books, your fees, your room and board, just feeding yourself, transportation, a whole range of other costs. So it essentially doubled the cost of the scholarship. The recommendation from the task force was that some kind of downward pressure needed to be placed on the needs-based component. And so the recommendation is that it be capped at some level because it was easy to see that under certain scenarios, over time, the needs-based component would actually dwarf the value of the scholarship. So that, again, some downward pressure needs to be placed on the needs-based component, potentially by capping it or whatever formula you all feel is most appropriate. But some downward pressure should be applied.
Okay. Third question? Senator French?
It's a nuance. Perhaps you said dwarf the value of, and I guess I'm not quite sure what that means. If you have a merit-based scholarship that is awarded pro rata, basically based on the amount of money available to the A, B, and C students, as you and Senator Stevens and others have pointed out, there still may be an enormous financial gap between what that merit-based scholarship buys in and the actual cost of going to college. That's where the needs-based scholarship steps in. There has to be some financial limit on that. I can see that. And I guess that's what you said, or am I missing something?
The scholarship task force ignored the phrase pro rata. You make a promise, we want to be able to keep the promise. First of all, the scholarship itself is capped. It's pegged. It was pegged at 2010 tuition. At UAF,
the merit-based
scholarship, right, which right. I believe was $4,755.
But I just need to stop you if I could, because what I asked Ms. Behrens on Wednesday was, what happens if you have 1,000 students, or pick a number, 10,000 students that qualify for that, but there isn't enough money to fund it fully? And what happens is, well, my understanding and my recollection is that you reduce the amount awarded per student to get it down to where the amount awarded matches the amount appropriate
available.
Right. So it's reduced pro rata across the board per student.
that is one way of keeping costs in check.
I don't mean to quibble with you, but it's not one way; it's the way. It's the way I understand we're going to do it.
Yeah, and I think that'll be a topic we'll want to discuss with Ms. Behrens. Probably not today, but
sure.
But yeah, I think you will have to do a pro rata especially if you tie. Let's say you say that your needs based is going to be 30-40% of whatever the merit is, then you do have a limited amount of money to give out. And I think the program she uses now is kind of on a pro rata basis, and I think that's what she would continue. But I don't want to put words in your mouth, and we'll have more discussion on this on Monday.
Thank you.
And thank you.
Again, I don't mean to quibble. I just, you know, for me, I'm just learning this. And I just really need to make sure I understand going forward how the mechanics work, how it's going to work on the ground for students. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay. Let's see. Finally, other policy recommendations. And really, I would characterize these as value maximization, investment maximization recommendations, how the state and the students can get the most bang for the investment they make in their education. And those were that any institution that would accept scholarship awards should integrate an advisor or advocate program as at least for scholarship awardees to help them as expeditiously and effectively as possible move themselves through their educational process. And that institutions accepting scholarship awards should make their best effort to provide course delivery structures that allow for 2 or 4 year certificate or degree completion timelines. Again, recognizing that the scholarship essentially is made to pay for 4 years of college. It was recognized that under certain degree programs, you would in fact not be awarding scholarships through completion of degree. Again, if it's a 5 year program, you're going to cover them up until their senior year, and then they have to make their own accommodations. So that as much as possible, we thought the institutions of higher learning should aid all students by going back to the what we consider the ideal of college going, which is a 4 year program, so that we could again fund them through completion, award them through completion.
Jomo, if you could, can you address how we had addressed the VOTEC and the alternative schools to the university, or maybe you just did that, the 2 year school. Like if you want to go to Avtech, how would this scholarship program assist?
The scholarship is available to students going either on both the academic and the VOTEC track. There are scholarships available. I believe that the awards are structured slightly differently. But it does make accommodation. I think actually I would love to use a lifeline.
Okay, well, we can save that. If we have time within your presentation, we'll bring up some of the administration that can answer your lifeline questions. Okay. Okay, did you have anything else you wanted to present?
No, sir, but I'm willing to take questions. There were a lot of the scholarship task force. I'm actually really proud of them. It was a diverse group. It wasn't just legislators, but it was legislators. It was folks from the administration, folks from the university. We also had the Alaska School Boards was on. It was a nice diverse group, and many different opinions and folky that they wanted to make sure that between them all, they wanted to make sure that all Alaska kids were taken care of and would have the opportunity to advance under the scholarship program. There at the bottom of the executive summary, it says, implementation of these recommendations is expected to provide the structure necessary for the scholarship to meet its two great promises. Its promise to Alaska that it can raise student academic performance by raising expectations, and its promise to students that if they challenge themselves and achieve academic success under a highly rigorous curriculum, the state will reward them with scholarships. I asked around to see if there was anything in particular that anyone wanted me to focus on during this presentation or any particular questions that they wanted me to address. No one had any. I will say that I know that Representative Seaton has come forward with a work draft bill to try to integrate the recommendations that were in this document into legislation. I know that the administration had come forward with a bill, I heard that they were going to come forward with a bill to create the scholarship account and a couple other things, but it was Rep. Seaton who was going to take care of some of the other recommendations. I know that, or I was told last night that regarding the needs-based component in that work draft, there was an omission or an oversight, but it was a mistake. So that the work draft, another work draft will be coming forward that addresses the needs-based component in a way that is more in line with the recommendation of the scholarship task force. So I just wanted to give you all a heads up on that.
Okay. Well, very good. I appreciate that overview, Mr. Sturt, and want to thank your boss for allowing you to have the time to join us. Senator Menard, you were on our task force. Did we leave out anything, or would you like to make any comments? Very good. Good job, Mr. Sturt. Appreciate that overview. You know, we have a little time. There were some questions that we weren't able to answer. Looks like we have the experts in the room. Maybe we could address some of those questions today. Again, the hope is that we'll be prepared to at least discuss some amendments on Monday. We do need, I don't know if anyone has signed up for public testimony today. We'll give Monday one more chance for public testimony and then close it with the hopes then of Wednesday or Friday actually having our own CS. As you mentioned, Representative Seaton for the House has completed a CS. I think a lot of us have read that. It's very good, although we're going to want to do our own CS and have our own thoughts, obviously, since we're a separate body. Diane, would you be wanting to join us and address? I think the needs-based component is still probably the biggest concern, as well as the rural schools and making sure all the kids have access. Senator Thomas, is that the two things that you're hearing the most about is the needs-based and then the access for all kids?
I believe so, and during some of the testimony, it was even indicated well that pressure will cause things to happen. You know, and the idea that we set a rigorous curriculum, and the particularly the rural areas will rise to the occasion. Of course, that wasn't indicated that without some help, of course, of assistance, but the assistance was nebulous as to what that would be. So I think that is one of the primary issues. The funding itself, obviously. And, I think those are two of the critical issues that, you know, impact this. And we obviously, this is, I think, caused us to apply, or at least attempt to apply pressure to the entire system to build that capacity to take care of those things and move things forward.
Chairman.
Senator Steve.
And I think also the issue that Ms. Behrens brought up our last meeting about trying to separate the, not to have everything in one bill, the confusion that if we include needs-based within a merit-based, that it might be too much to put in one bill, but also our concern that a funding structure to make sure that both are addressed along the way. And I know you've had some thoughts as chairman about that, and that'd be interesting to hear Ms. Behrens' reactions.
Ms. Behrens.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Diane Behrens. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education. And just as a background, I would indicate that in the task force report before you, there is an attachment 8, which is essentially that is the presentation that the commission made to the task force during their deliberations and fact-finding activity. So that is there for you. Just to describe the way in which the existing grant program works, we do have a grant program that has been in existence since 2005. Since 2009, the legislature has supported that program through some modest amount of funding. We did receive a capital appropriation, FY09, at a point when the corporation, which had been funding the program at the amount of $500,000 a year had diminished capacity to continue to provide those funds. So the legislature stepped in to keep the program going, albeit at a relatively modest amount. The average amount that has been offered in grants each year is $1 million. It's an average. It has varied from year to year, but that is the average for the last 3 years. The way we go about administering that grant is the free application for federal student aid is the application form. So any Alaska resident filing the FAFSA and attending a school in Alaska is in the pool. As long as they're certified as at least half-time enrolled in a program, and they do have to be enrolled in a Title IV program, so that is different than the APS program, which has a broader scope because the legislature wanted to ensure that training providers in the state who were not Title IV or accredited institutions would have an opportunity to at least seek participation in the scholarship program. So anyway, back to the Alaska Education Grant. We essentially take that entire pool, we rank them in needs order, and we fund grants from the greatest to the lowest need until the funds are exhausted. The only time we look at sort of tiebreakers is in the event that we're down to the last of the money and we have students who have similar need amount. In that case, the grant first goes to the student who is closest to completion of their degree. And secondly, I forget what the second criteria is, but we've never had that situation. So we have it there in case we need it, but it hasn't existed. And so, for instance, last year, the 9-10 year, we had almost 5,000 students in the pool. We made about 1,500 awards and actually dispersed approximately 900 grants. One of the things that is, I think, a factor with the efficacy of this program is the students, we don't package the aid at a point when students are still deciding, am I going to school, how will I enroll half-time or full-time. So often they're having to make the decision about whether to enroll and how many credits they want to enroll in, and then they find out that they have a grant. So we do have a sort of an attrition rate on that program that I think is a result of the funding not being predictable to the students. They can't count on it. So we do have our first analytical report on that program that we expect to finalize this month and make available to you. But most of the information we have there describes students' response. We did a survey. The students respond indicating that even the small grant amounts, and they range between, in 9-10, they ranged between $500 and $2,000, can make a difference to a student staying in school or dropping out. So we do believe the grant program makes a difference. We don't know, as it's currently funded and structured, that it actually affects behavior in terms of the planning of students. So that's something that we're looking at and we'll provide feedback to you on. With respect to, and I know Department of Education is here, but I do know the department through regulations with respect to the issue of students being able to complete the necessary curricula to qualify have done two things. They have a stepped up, a phase-in approach of the curricular requirements, starting in 11, moving to 12, and then to 13. So it's the full complement of curricular requirements that are applicable to the 2013 graduates, whereas the 2011 graduates, I believe, in addition to the high school graduation requirements, there's only one additional credit of science and math required of them. And in many districts, that is the district high school graduating requirement now. So that is not to say there are not districts who have a lower graduating standard where there may be an issue, but that is a mitigator, I think, that the department and the board were very careful about. The other thing that they have done is they have created a grace year, if you will, for the first two cohorts of graduating students, 2011 and 2012. They have a process that is being their program coordinator, Sherry Paul, with the department is working very hard to get information out to the district so students are aware of this. But essentially, if a student asserts that they have not, because of the school that they're attending, had reasonable access to the curriculum, and that is the only reason, they've met the other criteria, but that is the only reason they have failed to qualify, they have an additional 1 year after high school graduation to complete that requirement and then become fully eligible for the program and collect their scholarship the following year. So that's not a perfect solution, but certainly for a transition of a program of the magnitude this is, they were two steps that the department was able to take and the Board of Education endorsed.
Okay, very good. Senator French?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. And I was looking at Attachment 8. It's a fantastic sort of overview of how the current Alaska Advantage program works. I'm looking at page 16 of my task force report that's about midway through the presentation you made earlier. And I'm just, I see that there's a portion of the grant amounts based on the your SAT, ACT score. I'm looking at that chart on the bottom of page 16. And so I'm wondering whether you could characterize the current program as being somewhat merit-based. That is there some aspect to high scholastic achievement that benefits you in the current system?
There certainly is. Through the chair, Senator French, the way the program is structured right now, the base grant is actually half of the maximum. So right now, that's a $1,500 a year grant for a full-time student attending two terms. For a student who is in one of our priority categories, and there are several. One is a high academic achiever, as demonstrated by an ACT or SAT score in the top quartile of test takers. They qualify for the maximum of $3,000 a year. So that is an opportunity where someone who is an APS recipient who also meets that, they will automatically be in the pool for Alaska Advantage needs-based aid when they apply for the APS on their FAFSA, because the same form is going to be the application
puts you
for
into
both
programs. Both.
Exactly.
But I'm just wondering, if I could, Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering whether in the presence of a strong merit-based scholarship program, we need to continue to give extra points to strong merit-based students within what is now going to become, at least in my mind, not strictly, but certainly far more focused on needs-based pool of money. Do you see what I'm getting at? If you've got a merit based on this hand, you need a needs based on this hand, and yet awarding a portion of the needs based to those higher merit students, while it makes some intuitive sense, I think undercuts the ability of a true needs based student to get access to funds.
Through the chair, Senator French, I would agree with you to an extent. However, I actually think the way the two programs are structured now, and I'll have to admit I was on the funding task force and I understand the final recommendations, but I think the way the two programs currently are structured, they do complement each other, so that to create an extra need-based program in the scholarship program now isn't necessarily needed. I mean, that was in our discussion, the task force, there were members who said, well, we need to have a special need-based program for the scholars as well. And my response was, the way the two are structured right now, your highest academic achievers already have that because the two programs are somewhat interoperable.
Maybe I was not as clear as I could have been in my question. I guess what I'm asking you is, in your answer, I think I can anticipate, but the question I asked you is whether you think the Alaska Advantage program needs to be adjusted in the face of a robust merit-based scholarship program to reduce the advantage given to strong academic performers in Alaska Advantage, and I think your answer is no.
That is my answer.
Okay, thank you.
I had to think about it for a second, but yes,
thank
that is my answer.
Thank you.
And Ms. Behrens, too, if I understand, you also, don't you prioritize some majors? For example, at one time, I think we had a major shortage of teachers and nurses, on the needs-based component, you gave a priority to those?
Those are the other categories. There are two, the high academic achiever and those in the identified workforce shortage programs. They have been, for the last 3 years, the categories are education, protective and social services, allied health, and process and resource extraction industries.
Okay.
So those folks also qualify for the maximum grant rather than simply the base grant amount.
Okay, and then let me ask you two more questions. One is that I personally do appreciate that there is some SAT or ACT score taken into consideration before a needs-based grant is given. I think the concern, we're hearing this from the university, that a lot of our students are not prepared for college. Mm-hmm. And so if you have a needs-based student that's a 2.0 student, for example, in high school, I'm just afraid we may be setting them up for failure. They're not ready. They're not qualified for the university. And that's my concern, and that's why I do appreciate that you are taking some other factors into consideration. And then second, we're going to wrestle with what is an appropriate dollar amount to set aside in the Alaska Advantage program for the needs-based program. And, as you mentioned, you're currently at about $1 million. And I think you've mentioned to me to fully fund the program, you would need about 8.5. Is there a compromise in there somewhere that still meets all your needs that maybe doesn't get the program so heavy? Because you'd be looking at probably $20 million for the merit, 8.5 for the needs-based, almost $30 million a year program. That my concern anyway, but I'm not on finance, but. That when the Finance Committee gets this, that they'll just say that's too much.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, the 8.5, and I think this is a point that I would like to underscore, the $8.5 million that I conveyed to the task force is the dollar amount necessary if we are to increase the base grant to $3,000 for all students in the eligible pool. Right now, as I indicated, the way we're administering the program, the base grant is 1.5, although the maximum grant is 3,000. And by regulation, the commission has created those differentials. But if it's the intent of the legislature last year in raising the maximum is that is the amount to be made available to all grant applicants, then it would be 8.5. If we continue to administer the program as we do now, then half of that amount, about 4.3, would be the amount to fully fund the program so that a grant goes to all eligible students. And I would just note that in the current construct, in order for a student to get the priority grant, they have to be the next highest need in line. So we don't bump the high-achieving student in front of someone with a higher need. So it just, what it does is when we get to that person in the hierarchy of need, it's a question of do they qualify for the base grant or the priority amount. And so it gives them a larger grant, but it does not move them ahead of someone with greater need.
Okay. Obviously, this is going to be a topic of more discussion. Any other questions for Ms. Behrens? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay, well, I think we'll conclude today's meeting and take this back up on Monday. Again, the co-chair, Thomas here, will be conducting the meeting on Monday, but I believe your intent is to at least present some amendments for discussion and with hopes that we as a committee can agree on CS by the latter part of the week. Senator Thomas.
That's correct. We have several that we will get to the committee members and make sure that they have the opportunity. But they are basically the issues that we have continued to discuss and some that we touched on today. So that will be kind of old hat to most of us. Senator French is, I think, already aware of some, as he can see just in his few meetings. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. There's nothing else to come before the committee at this time. We adjourn.